Okay, hi, good afternoon. So the topic here is counterparty risk. Now, when we speak about counterparty risk, there is a lot of things we can say. There has been already some talk. And so what I try to focus is just on one aspect. Of course, we can digress, and you are really welcome to ask me questions, etc. But what I want to focus is really how do we compute the price distribution and at future point in time. This is what I will focus on. So in a sense, if I take Dan talk, Dan was making a post-process after having the VT, right? I will try to show you how to compute this VT. Or if I take the talk, I guess it was from you, Agostino. Oops, sorry. Technical problem. It was this NPV, how to compute NPV. Okay, again, I try to say how we can compute it. Good? So let's first of all, so, and the technique that I will use is what I call American Monte Carlo, which is very similar to what somebody else before, I don't remember the name, unfortunately, the guy from Lebanon, exactly, you, sorry, explained in or touched in your talk. I don't know if it is the same or not, but could be some point in contact. And also you, maybe, Claudio, you mentioned at backward something. I'm not sure if it is the same technique or not. Your comment will be welcome, okay? So first thing I will do is I will go to the last slide, okay? This is good, huh? Okay. I will not go maybe to all of them. And okay, this is part of my team. This is me. And oops. And of course, all this work is not just me. It is the team which I work with at UBS. And we have implemented a system based on these ideas, which run at UBS. So of course, I cannot claim everything on me. If everything is nice, it's on me, of course. If there are mistakes, it's on these guys, clearly. Yeah, but I wanted to say upfront that a lot of things is not just on me. Good. Let's go back. So, okay, so this is the introduction. I don't have, I think, to say much. We had already some talk before mine. We know it is counterparty exposure. However, what I want to say here is, till now, in a sense, this VT computation was considered simple. Okay. In reality, I don't, probably because either it is in certain cases simple or because we didn't focus on it. In reality, when we have two counterparties, say AB, let's say a bank and another counterparty, the portfolio is very complicated. We have interest rate swaps, okay. We have cross-currency swaps, vanilla. We have exotics. We have equity. We have CDOs in swap form, of course, CDS. We have all possible things. And when we speak about exotic, we have steepener, so products which depends on different points of the curve. So all possible, the nastiest things that you can imagine. And people deal with these things in an investment bank, typically. It's nothing special. And they want to compute counterparty exposure. And they want to compute counterparty exposure not only because they want to look at it, but because they have to hedge it. Okay? Famous CVA stuff, what Dan was mentioning, etc. and so on. So you want to have something which is accurate enough. You cannot just live with this is a normal distribution, this is an approximation. You have to compute it properly in a sense. It is not just controlling, it is hedging, so it's real money. If you do something wrong in your VT, you mishedge, and at the end of the day or the month or whatever, you got fired because you have lost your money. Or maybe you got fired. That's another question. So what we mentioned by counterparty risk, clearly it is what we could lose in case of default. We have spoken about it. Now I think also we can have many counterparties, and here again come Dan with his allocation. We have sovereign, okay, with different problems. We have corporates, we have hedge funds, all type of things. And of course, when we compute especially CVA, and then we think about how to hedge it, the problem comes, do we have a CDS on this counterparty? But it's not what I will focus on. I will focus just on the computation of my price distribution. Okay, let's move on. Okay, here again, I didn't know what the talk was before mine, before coming here, so I had to make a little bit of introduction. However, so this is clear. Only one thing again, why credit exposure is so important? Maybe I stress it again, this. It is important for risk control because normally the control function in a bank look at this counterparty exposure at the price distribution, take some quantiles, they call PFE or MLE or whatever, the quantile of this distribution, and they say, this is the limit with this counterparty, don't exceed it, please. Okay. So if you don't compute correctly your quantile, you go either up, you exceed the limit and you don't know it, or you are too low, or whatever. What happens, again, in practice, very, very often, is that banks for complex products don't know exactly how to compute it, so they don't believe in this number. They put a limit, they say 100 million is your limit. Then they look at the report, they see 300 million. And then they say, yeah, but in any case, your computation is conservative, we don't believe in it, so let's go for 300 million. Okay? So again, the point is to have an accurate measure where people can believe in it in a sensible way. This is for control, but of course it is important in the sense of dynamic hedging. You want to hedge your counterparty exposure, you compute the CVA. So here comes the question in which measure you want to do these things. Is it risk neutral for hedging? Is it a real measure or physical measure for control? Question which we can discuss for a very long time. And then it comes, you know, especially now capital is not anymore so cheap, so you want to use this measure, the same measure for capital requirement. And then also what is very interesting is the last point which I put here. Once you have your VT, and your VT, let's see again what it is a parallel distribution in the future. In a sense, you can see what your product, how your product could behave in the future. And it's a good insight to see what could go wrong, not just in terms of counterparty exposure, but also in terms of how your product behaves. You can then apply the same technique that you use for unsecured transaction to a secured one and see how much your product could drop in value during its life. You have many structured products that you know will pull to par at the end, you know, at maturity. But if you want to sell it before par, you lose some money. So you can say to the client, this is how much you could lose in this scenario. Okay, let's move on. Please interrupt me if you have questions, if something is not clear, because again, it's always difficult to know what other people know, and what is trivial for somebody could be difficult for me, and vice versa. So, nomenclature. I use PFE to say my quantile of the distribution. EPE is the expected positive exposure. So I take my path, I put to zero what is negative, and I take the mean of this positive path. I call it EPE, expected positive exposure. Again, in Dan Cole talk, it was E, right? CVA, okay, we already said it. I don't take here into account, because I focus on how to compute VT, once you have it, you can compute CVA, you compute DVA, and whatever. What do you do with this number? Different questions. Okay, here I have already said it, that. The important bit is when you compute, when you hedge, when you compute CVA, you can see that there is a strong link between EPE and CVA. Again, something that we know, somehow we will not spend time on this. Okay, and this is what we already know. Good. So, goal, I have already mentioned it, but I repeat it, I always think it's not bad to be not too fast. Here, what I want to say is, how do I compute price distribution in the future? And how do I do for complex transactions? This is my point. I don't do it for a vanilla swap. We all know how to do it. I want to have some exotic stuff inside. And I want to have a big portfolio. So the technique which I use, I call it America Monte Carlo. Somebody else would call it Longstaff-Schwarz regression. Other guys will call it backward induction, whatever. I will explain what I mean by that, and people will find it common knowledge, I guess. And the interesting bit here is that this technique, this American Monte Carlo technique or Longstaff-Schwarz, is very often used in the structured desk to compute, to price structured product. Okay, so you want not to compute exposure in the future, but to price a structured product. Very often, you use this America Monte Carlo technique. Okay, depend on the bank, depend on the desk, but it can be used. In a sense, what I do is to misuse or to extend, depends how you look at it, this technique to compute exposure in the future. Okay, and then I will show a little bit that once you have this type of technique to compute, it's very quick, very easily. You can you can represent your portfolio in a nice way. So your mathematical framework, which I call my AMC, is my mathematical framework, very easily and very nicely is reflected in a computational framework. So you can book your trades or represent your trades in a way that they are understood very well by this stuff. Okay? And then I can show that when I compute CVA, I can compute it as everybody does, like a product, so to speak, of my expected exposure times, okay, it's not a time, but it's kind of a combination with my credit spread. But I can do something nicer in a sense. I can imagine that I have a new product, which I call a contingent credit default swap, which is a product which will pay you at each point in time your VT. Okay, so it's a product on my price distribution, and the price of this product is actually just my CVA. And why I do that? For two reasons. First, because it's nice to do some complicated stuff, of course, but more importantly, because these CCDS exist in the market. They are not very liquid, they are not for each counterpart, but they do exist. This is one point. This is not enough, because here I'm just computing stuff, I'm not trading it. The second point is, once you have a product, the CCDS, now I can compute derivative sensitivities of this product. So it gives me a nice way of computing sensitivities without having to bump some parameters or to doing some stuff which is more difficult computationally or conceptually and so on. I will speak a little bit about sensitivities if I have time. Good, and all these things, you know, are other things that we can, once you have your VT, you can work on it. Anyway, let's move on. So, contents, this basic concept, America Monte Carlo, okay, let's move. Okay, now, I show a little bit, stuff again, can be very obvious for maybe most of you, but anyway, I have my slides, I go through. I have a swap, okay, simple interest rate swap. What did I do here? I receive 6 months LIBOR rate. Okay, I pay on certain notional, I pay fixed rate. Okay, I want my VT. What is VT? It is these things here. Okay, here is in 3D, I have a density. I want really to see what will happen in the future of my prices. And once I have it, I can somehow cut my distribution and take some quantize. And this is a picture that everybody who deals with counterparty exposure knows. This is how much I could lose with a 97.5 quant probability in case of default of the counterparty. This black line is my PFE. This green line is how much is the 2.5 quantile. So if I look from the counterparty perspective, how much they could lose with 97.5 probability if we default. And this is my EPE, my expected exposure, which is my, you know, seen from my side. If I want to see at the EP from the other side, I will see a curve which is a little bit here below negative and below below this red line. Okay? So nothing science fiction. We can do it. It's clear. Now, this is what I just said, you know, how to compute it. I have all my path and, you know, of my price, of my swap, and here I take this EP, which was my light, and so on and so forth. Okay, so let's move. Let's do something a little bit fancier. It's just, it's nothing special, but it's just to say what we have shown now, till now, can become very easily complicated. I have a product which is not at all exotic. Okay, everybody does it, right? It's a Bermudan option. Sorry. A swap with a Bermudan optionality. Okay, you can have two possibilities. You can call or the client can call, right? So you can be either long or short optionality. Okay, nothing fancy, nothing special, but look at the counterpart exposure. Here is the example where we are long optionality, so the client can call. Here, in reality, what happens is that the swap is not at par anymore. I have used the same parameter, and this value here will be basically the value of your Bermudan option, right? And then, most probably, the PFE would not change really very much. Why? Because the client will not call the product when if it is in the money for him, right? So it is not a surprise that this... Oops, sorry. I have, I think, a problem with my ear. I guess that most probably the profile here is very similar to the old profile. What changed is this one. But look if it is short callability. Short callability is this graph here, below. Okay. Why that? Because as soon the value of the swap goes in the money to the client will call it. Okay, it's for zero, right? So they will call it, and you see at each callability point, it drops to zero. So you have this behavior. Okay? I think, again, nothing special. But the point is, how do you compute these things now? Okay, let's do another example. Let's stay here for a moment. How do you compute a callable swap? Callable swap is, in general, computed by Monte Carlo, right? Or not, with some numerical algorithm, not with a closed form solution, right? I think everybody agrees on that. Now, if I think at my old method, if I want to have scenarios that I run, I will come back to that in more detail, and then I price my function, my callable swap as a scenario, very soon I'm dead, simply. Because unless I have extremely big computing performance, I will not be able to run these things. Simply, computationally, I can't do that. Okay, let's look at the k-default swap, another example. K-default swaps are also nice, also for other reason, I think. What kind of measure should we consider when we take into account a k-default swap as a counterparty measure? I take here what I have. Here is my EP, okay? Sorry, my PFE. Okay, here I have my PFE. I will need some help, I guess. Yeah. Okay. So, here I have my PFE on 97.5 confidence interval. Is it right? Yeah. Yeah. Do people hear me, or is it all right? Yeah. Yeah. Great. Thank you. So if I look at my PFE 97.5, okay. So you can imagine 97.5 seems to kind of Armageddon, right? It is the probability that you lose a lot. But still, most probably this CDS, when I computed it, the spread of the underlying reference entity was small. So even if I had a default of my reference entity, my 97.5 confidence interval was not taking it into account. So I was missing completely the risk of this transaction, right? Here again, what do I have here, just to repeat it? I have a CDS between two counterparties, a bank and another bank or a corporate or whatever, and I have as an underlying a reference entity. So when I am thinking about this quantile, I'm thinking about the price distribution between corporate and bank, and if you want, what is driving this exposure is the spread of my reference entity. So if the reference entity has more spread, most probably my quantile will not even take into account this. However, if I look at the 99.5 quantile, boom, I get it everything, because most probably I have more than 1% defaults, blah, blah, blah. So I immediately go in the second part of the tail of my distribution. And I think, and everybody I think agree here in this forum, but few people agree in a bank, is it would be nice to have as a measure an expected shortfall, which gives you the mean of the tail, so you capture something, a little bit of your exposure. Yeah, sure. There is no option here. I'm not sure if I. Yeah. No. In the sense, you have all your path in a sense, you know. And in some path you will exercise your option, in some path you will not. So. You know, your trade will mature at maturity. So you don't know exactly what will happen at each path in each scenario. It depends. At one scenario, you can exercise your path, and then, of course, the path doesn't exist anymore in that sense. But of course, in another path, you will not exercise, and the path do exist, and so on and so forth. Of course, this question, you know, is tricky, because, you know, in some cases, it's very obvious, like in this example. But what do you do for k-default swap? For k-default swap, it's very interesting. Because if you say everything when it defaults doesn't exist anymore, so you have a path, on this path it defaults, the trade doesn't exist, very soon you will see, let's take as an example, a CDO equity tranche. You will see that very soon all your paths are defaulted. And then you will see that your exposure has a very nice profile, very big at the beginning, and as time goes by, it goes to zero. Why? Because you don't have path anymore, right? The product doesn't exist. So it can be very misleading, because let's say credit officer or risk guy will say, okay, I have risk at the beginning, but in 30 years' time, no risk. Yeah. And of course, this is not the case. So interpreting all this measure is not so easy. One has to pay attention what it really, how you really treat after a default happens. It's not so trivial in a sense. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. If, you know, if, yeah. Yeah, you know, as I see it, I don't know if I answered your question. You have a spread. Your lambda, your hazard rate, you simulate. You can think, you simulate it, you simulate the default of the reference entity, okay? At this scenario, with this default, you see what your price is of your CDS, okay? And then you say, if my counterpart default, this is what I lose, okay? Now, of course, you are absolutely right, if I interpret you right. There is a correlation between the CDS spread of your counterparty and your CDS spread of your underlying. So, of course, you have to pay attention about that that as well. And then things become more complicated. And then you have all this wrongway risk, which comes into account, which you can ignore in some cases, but clearly ignoring here for a CDS, it's strange, right? Okay, good. So, this was a little bit to put the things in perspective. We have products which can be vanilla, can be exotic. This is the type of problem that you encounter. Now, how do people, and again, I don't want you to think about that in this case, but I see in banks, I see with the regulators, I see a lot of people, how do they think that they can address the problem of computing exposure, compute our VT? Okay? Seems trivial in a sense. What do you do? Here you simulate scenarios. So what I mean by scenario, your CDS spread, your default defaults of the underlying reference entity, your equity, your interest rate, your FX, everything. You have this big Monte Carlo simulation. Good. Here it is. You go in time, right? And here you have all your path. You see what I mean, right? Now, what you can do is to say, at each point in time here, I have a nice pricing function from the front office, right? They have implemented these things. Okay, I call this function. Good. I reprice my pricing my portfolio using all this pricing function at this point in time, this scenario and so on. This is what I have put here. I'm happy. Done. I have my price distribution. We go home and we all live happy. Okay, and so on. And of course, then you compute the PFE and the EPE, right? This is what normally people think and what is also very often we try to do. And now my question is, how do you do if this pricing here, you know, when I put this arrow, is not closed form? It is maybe computed with a grid, with a PDE, with a Monte Carlo. What do you do? Do you really call at each point a new Monte Carlo engine? Not sure. And really, are you sure that you can call, in a again, big investment bank, all these functions easily, having nice interfaces to call them? Not sure. In reality, what you will end up very soon is that if you start with this thing, you will do your swap portfolio, everybody's happy, good, well done, okay? Then you move to a little bit more exotic, and you start with approximation. And after a couple of years, it's a total mess, because everything is not pricing accurately. So, this is the issue that I have just said. Of course, why do we have these issues? Because all these scenarios that we send have to be the same across all system. We want to be what we call in our jargon scenario consistent. When you compute VT of your counterparty, you have to have the same scenarios across all asset classes, right? FX, equity, and don't forget also that interest rate will be everywhere. Even if you have an equity portfolio, your interest rate will be everywhere because you still have to discount stuff. Okay. So let's move on. Okay, I move here. this is what we suggest here, and if you want the point of my talk, is how can we try to solve these problems? And it is actually what we do. I know that other banks do for some part of their portfolio, and of course comments are welcome here. So what we say is the following. When we compute, as I mentioned before, the price of an exotic, very often they use this called American Monte Carlo technique. What do they do? They go at maturity of the trade, or they go where the payoff is known. Okay, for a swap, it will be, for a vanilla swap, it will be at each cash flow, you know, where you pay and receive stuff. If you have an option, it is the payoff of the option. If you have some more exotic stuff, it is whatever your payoff is. And payoff is well known. There is nothing stochastic in it. Okay, you know it. And then what you do is to, so at maturity, then what you try to do is to do backwards induction. So you try to estimate this value, knowing that, and using some regression formula. Okay? Using some estimators, some what we call observables, which try to explain this value here. Okay? And using some regression, you try to go to obtain an estimate of your values here. Okay? Again, nothing spectacular, but still something which is nice, because in general this technique, what will produce it, when you go back from maturity to inception, you will have first of all the price of your product, but if you do some if you pay attention, you store all this data, okay, and then you have your price distribution, right? Okay. Oops. And the nice thing is that this algorithm is generic in the sense that once your payoff is defined, and if you have your market factor simulated, you can apply it for any type of product, provided your dynamic is rich enough to pick the characteristic of your product. Okay, anyway, let's go a little bit more in how you model. Now, here's some formula, not much. Don't like too much to put in a talk formulas, but how we can present our framework. So, what we have to pay attention now is we want to have a framework where you compute exposure, so this VT, for all type of transaction, callable or not callable. Okay. So, and we assume that callability or exercising a new portfolio can happen at some discrete point in time. Why that? Anyway, you know, at the end of the day, everything has to be discretized. So making a discrete approximation will not be bad. Okay? And we have, in general, two products. Just a second to be sure. You have a product P where, you know, somebody is entitled to receive some cash flow, and then you can exercise in another product, in another portfolio Q. Okay? And this is normally what happens if you have, this is the classical formula of your portfolio value, if no exercise is happen. Good? Oops. Okay, now, exercise. How you exercise? Again, this is kind of complicated thing. If people come from a front office pricing perspective, they don't see it. Suppose, I make always this very simple example. Suppose that you have a swaption, right? Swaption, Bermudan swaption, is nothing spectacular. But already, if you look at pricing, you don't care if you cash settle your swaption or if you physically enter in the swap, right? Different question for exposure. If you have a swaption and you want to compute the exposure of the swaption, you have to pay attention. If you cash settled, when it's cash settled, it's done, right? The trade doesn't exist anymore. If you physical settle, I mean if you enter in the swap, clearly you have to compute exposure also after this the expiry date. And again, why I'm saying that? Because when I have two communities here to speak with, the pricing guys who don't see these things every day, so they see, okay, what is your problem? Everything is easy. And on one side, and on the other side, I have the credit risk community who says, oh, we are interested not in pricing, we are just interested in scenarios, and you do approximation. So I have to bring these two things together, which can be not so easy. So I can have physical settlement, as I mentioned, cash settlement, intrinsic exercise where you simply say, okay, I pay the penalty, like in a cancelable swap, or no exercise, just for completeness. And then here's the only formula which I have. I can say that my VT, my price distribution, it is given by a couple of things. I have, this is the value of my cash flow before exercise, right? Here is the value of my cash flow post exercise. And I have to make this little soup because, of course, I have to understand which is my optimal strategy in order to decide when I exercise or not, right? Okay, this is the stuff that I want to compute. And now the way I will compute it is via America Monte Carlo, right? And here I have my little numerator, which is always important to remember, okay, because it makes take care of a lot of things. Okay, once I have exercised, I will have a new portfolio, I have to change and say, okay, now my new portfolio is like that. Good, fine. Let's move on. Okay, a little bit, please. No. Exercise simply means I have a swaption. Okay? Just an example. Suppose that you have a swaption. You want to compute the exposure of a swaption. Swaption exercise means I exercise into the swap. Okay? But I can imagine to exercise in anything. You know, I can have the weird thing in the world. I can have a product which switch at some point in another one. Okay? And I have to choose when it is convenient to switch. So, and the date where I switch is the exercise option. Here, I don't take into account at all the counterparty default. It's given the default of the counterparty. The default of the counterparty will come in either when I speak about CCDS or to compute CCDS, and then I take everything together. Okay? Or if I compute it separately, just in my CDS curve and DP and so on. Okay? It is what I do. Sorry, I don't get your question. Sorry. Maybe I missed your question. Yeah. But this is the backward induction. And yeah. 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 No, it is on this fixed scenario set. Sorry, I don't understand you. Yeah. You know, I don't know exactly what you mean, because everybody uses this terminology in different sense. What I have to say is, lattice is generally what is used, for example, for a PD approach, right? Yeah, okay, exactly. In effect, your lattice is correspond to my scenarios here. Okay. Yeah, now, yeah, the only thing, the only problem is, you have to remember that I have to use this engine for everything, for all products. Around, you know, and turns out to be more convenient to have in a Monte Carlo approach and scenarios like that rather than your lattice. But in essence, it's exactly the same. Now, for a specific portfolio, for a specific application, maybe lattice is more convenient. But as a generic tool, probably not. Now, an interesting bit is, and in fact, we are thinking, and maybe one day we'll do it, how to combine these two things. You have a lattice, you have a, and now it becomes interesting. But again, you have to remember that my goal is to, I have to, this is in production, you know. And so I have to be, of course I can spend time to think about other solutions, and it's always very welcome. But at the end of the day, there is something which has to work, in a sense. And we found out that using this approach is not bad. Okay, please. Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
So you need to make, you essentially make your scenario correspond to your evaluation point.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It is what you discussed as well in your before we had here your picture. It's exactly the same. Exactly the same. Yeah. The point is computational, also because 1,000 scenarios are not enough. We use, for example, 10,000 scenarios. And why that? Because if you want to price these things, you need some accuracy.
The question that I have is, using your regression on the overall scenario, or do you do it almost by product?
Product by product. You know, the idea of doing... everything together. We had this idea. Actually, we never did it because it becomes too complicated, and then the power of explanation, your backward induction, is not good enough. Already here, there are enough problems if you do product by product. And there is no advantage. You know, some people were thinking maybe if you do everything together, you will cancel out errors. Actually not. It becomes just messy, I would say. Okay, now a little bit, I will not go here, because here is open a completely different topic. But of course, in all what I said, what is behind it is scenarios, right? I do my backward induction, but I need scenarios. What kind of scenarios, what model can I use to produce this scenario? This is a very difficult question. And why is it difficult? Because normally what people do is the following. Again, in banks, you think very differently, but in banks this happens. They start with interest rate swap, and they say, okay, let's take a simple Helen White, I don't know why Helen White, but Helen White model, okay? And they use it, they compute the scenarios and so on. Then they go to the equity book, okay, and they say, okay, now let's take a Black and Scholes, okay, with black. And then they forgot about the interest rate, which is stochastic. And then they say, okay, fine, let's take the path of the interest rate and put it in my model, okay, and let's do the whole machinery together. And of course, this is not right from a arbitrage-free, blah, blah, blah conditions. And then they take the FX and they do the same thing. On the other side, if you want to have the mega model, you are stuck as well, because this mega model has to run at the end. It has to run, has to be practical, has to give price, has to be calibrated with real prices. You can't have the full fancy model. So you need to find something which is good enough, okay, to give reasonable price, so when you go to the trader, they don't laugh on your face, and quick enough that they don't wait till tomorrow to get a price, okay, and still kind of reasonable. If at the end of the day, your recovery rate when you compute CVA is between what we are discussing at lunchtime, 10% and 90%, do you really care to have the last digit in your simulation? Probably not. So it's, again, kind of compromise between different things. And, you know, again, here I give a little bit of what we thought is, let's try to get a simple way of simulating the interest rate, which is modular in a sense. Let's try to have the possibility of calibrating FX independently. This gives arbitrage condition. Let's try to minimize this arbitrage you can do. And if you really want to be more precise, let's try to have a more complicated model. Same for equity. And then what really becomes difficult, and here's the reason why I put in this golden box, is credit. Because to simulate all your names and to have everything consistent and maybe, you know, with the correlation becomes really complicated. Just one comment on CDO, which I think is worthwhile. What people do when they price a CDO? Okay. They use, in the bank, in the industry, I don't know which bank, but I guess everybody does more or less the same, Gaussian copula, Bayes correlation, right? What does it mean? They have for each tranche, on the same capital structure, a nice parameter that they can tune till they get the price they want to observe in the market, right? Now, I'm the poor guy who has all these tranches together, and I need one price and one correlation to price everything. How do I do that? And how do I do in a way that when I compare my price, I'm not too far away from what the desk gives? It's kind of mission impossible, in a sense. And here is where I think there can be a lot of work from academia, practitioner, blah, 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 to find something which is reasonable and can give some results. Okay, anyway, let's move on. Of course, not to forget if you're in FX, in equity, you want to have skew, you want to have smile, etc. Good. So. No, I don't. I need a correlation parameter. And I do it by trying to characterize each name between sector, region, etc., and have some idiosyncratic term, okay? And then, in a sense, to calibrate with prices on tranches. And of course, you know, this calibrating procedure is prone to, not to error, but depending on the calibrating instrument, you get different results. And I'm exactly now in the middle of trying to see what is best, in a sense. Okay, good. Let's move on to America Monte Carlo. A little bit on how it works. Again, most probably you know it, but I will still do it. What you need is really to explain to, what I want to do is to have some observable, what I call observable, so some variables, which are these theta, okay? These are my observables, and I try to explain my payoff via these observables. How do I do it? I hope I have a nice picture. Yes, I do have. I hope it is right, because it is several times. What I know is this stuff here, okay? This is what I know at times t plus 1. The last, I have always to think that the first step will be maturity, where I really know everything, right? But I can imagine that at this point in time I know it, okay? And what I want to do is to have this, right? Which is my my estimate of my price at this time t. Okay? And how do I do that? And I have and I have via regression, this there are arrow which allows me to compute these things via my regression, my observables. I have what I call my continuation value, so the value of my portfolio if I decide to continue. I can compute VQ, you see, if I exercise, how much it is. I compare this to value, I decide if I continue or if I exercise. And the whole trick of my... Thank you, remember my talk for this stuff at least. I know, probably my ear is Italian ear, you know, it's not not US compatible, so it's Canadian compatible. Okay, let's see. Okay, let's hope. And the trick and or the art or whatever you want to call it is here in this arrow to make this backward induction. This is what I write here, right? Let's see what is next. Okay, here is another nice picture. I have nice people in my team who do it for me. Don't believe that I'm able to do that stuff. Okay, so somehow what I have is my future value, which I know. And okay, here is the trick in a sense. What I want to compute is this expectation, right? And the whole trick in this backward induction is to say, instead of computing this conditional expectation like that, I consider that this is the function of my observable. These red things are my observables, what I called before my theta, right? And the whole trick is to find the function, which is, okay, the whole trick is to first of all find the observable which are good enough to explain your values. And the second thing is to find functions which allows you to do this regression. And then not only that, here it is not shown here in this graph, but in reality, if you look at Longstaff Schwarz, what does he do? He takes the whole lot. So he takes all these points, right? Okay, and he does a regression over there. If you look at Tilley, which was one of the first guys who computes price of put option on this stuff, he takes only one point, right? And he doesn't do any regression. What do we do? Of course, we combine, as always bankers and practitioners do, take a couple of ideas, they cramp, put them together, and they produce something, right? So what we did is to say, let's take some bundle, what we call bundles, and then regress within this bundle with some nice functions, so some polynomials in principle. Okay? And then you hope that everything goes well, because this is the problem. Now, how do you do... The question which everybody sensible will ask is your value right if you compare with what you compute analytically or what you compute in other ways? Is your price, is your exposure, how does it behave, and so on? And again, we are in the middle of looking at it. Please. You know, again, it is an algorithm, it's a heuristic, like all heuristic. The reason is only by doing experiments, you know. Is in a sense, if you can take a bundle, where, because at the end of the day, you want to have this value. This value will depend on what is close to that value, not to everything. So if you say, I take what is in proximity of this value, then I interpolate between this value with some function, it makes sense. Now, there has to be academician, here's the reason why I'm here, and you are here, and so on, to see, okay, it makes sense, actually you can do it better this way, actually your error is like that, and so on and so forth. Okay, I have the sense, in a sense, the luxury of just doing it, and seeing if it works or not. But of course, what I have to do is to see, is the result all right or not? And the nice thing here is, I can do experiments where I compare what I do with what should be, let's say, what is theoretically right. So what I did here, for example, I took a swap, okay, vanilla swap. In a vanilla swap, I can really do my scenario generation with my model, okay, then my pricing analytically, nicely, okay. What I get is right by definition, right, okay. And then, on the same side, I can do my AMC, by regression, okay. And then I can compare the curves, and here you see, of course, you know, as usual, graphs don't say anything. But in a sense, I can do two things. Compare my price, and then compare each point here, and say, are they close or not? And what we find is that, in general, the values are not bad. If I go to CVA, it's even nicer, because when I compute the expected positive exposure, this is equivalent of computing a swaption on the portfolio that you are computing on. So I can compare really my value that I compute via America Monte Carlo, with what I observe in the market. And if I see some discrepancies, I can say, okay, I have a certain error. And then, of course, I have to compare this error with simply the noise that I have anyway, because I have a Monte Carlo process, right? And till now, the results are not bad. They are not always excellent, but they are not bad. Of course, the problem is when I come into more exotic products, let's say a steepener, okay, then it's very tough because I don't have a price where everybody agrees, right? So what I do is the following. I go to my desk, the exotic desk, and say, how do you price your product? And of course, they will use not my model, which is simpler, because my model needs to be simpler in a sense, but they use some stochastic volatility BGM model with, triple stuff, blah, blah, blah. And they will see something different. So my job is to say, is my value close enough? And here is price, I speak only about the price. Is it close enough to make my valuation sensible or completely stupid? And for the most interest rate stuff, I'm not disappointed. It's all right. Of course, this does not, if I have these points right, okay, you can ask me, okay, but are then the distribution right on, as you go on in time, how does it compare? And here it's difficult, because already to have here an error estimate analytically, it's not a simple problem. I know there are some work from Rogers, from many people, probably there is more stuff around it I know, okay? But I don't know anybody, actually, who looked, in time what happened, and make a good estimate from a theoretical point of view of how much is your America Monte Carlo error as you move on in time. Okay? I don't have. So the only thing which I have, really, are experiments where I can compare with something which is known. And of course, if you know stuff, please let me know. It could be interesting to see it. Okay? Let's move on. Okay, another topic. Now, we are all happy with... Oops. I'm done. Okay. Okay. Then just one thing, if you don't mind, I will just say one little thing. It's a kind of an idea, and people can then think about it. Sensitivities. Okay. When you compute CVA, when you compute counterparty exposure, everybody wants to have sensitivities. What I mean by sensitivity is the derivatives, so your nice partial derivatives, but not only with respect to the credit spread of the counterparty, but also with respect of your market factor. So in this case of an FX option, you want to know if your FX market move, how will your exposure move, how will your CVA move, right? And what people do very generally in the bank to compute sensitivities in when you price stuff, they bump the parameter. They take FX, okay, a little bit up, a little bit down, they look at the new price, they compute it, this is your sensitivities. Okay, fine. Now, I'm stuck, because if I start to do these things for my portfolio, which is big, okay, if I have to do it not just at time zero, but across the time, how can I bump all these parameters? How many machines I have? I have to buy all your stuff, Claudio. I can't. I can't do that, right? So, the idea that we had, and here again we are experimenting, is to say, instead of, in a sense, bumping in space, we bump in time. Because we have all our price distribution, we go one step, let's say one day, we have here the time zero, initial value, and then we have our distribution, let's say one day after or a couple of days after, and we see, and we try to interpret our move as a move depending on some parameters. And then out of this information, we back out the sensitivities. And now, again, I'm in the middle of explaining the PNL using this methodology. And it seems, okay, not excellent, not, you know, always right, but not bad, at least for the big risk factors. Of course, as soon as you have noise, so America, Monte Carlo noise, interest rate noise, blah, 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 becomes a bit more difficult. But again, I had discussion with other guys in academia, and they say, yeah, it seems all right. So if you have other idea, other comments, please, very welcome. I'm done. Just one thing. Okay, I didn't do all these things. This is where you find all the information. This is the book that I just wrote with my team, or part of my team, not all of them. This is my original core group. And it came out, when was it? Maybe in January. And you find these ideas, of course, a little bit more detailed, not too much, because we didn't want to be too boring. It's a small book, 200 pages, not a Bible. Feel free. And if you find something which is not right, tell me. Not too loud, don't scream. And this is it. Thank you.